by for Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors with your host, Drew Kirby.
Hey, this is Luke Holmes.
I am Morgan Wallen.
I'm Riley Green.
I'm Travis Denning.
Hey, I'm Aaron Lewis.
Hey, it's Luke Bryan.
I'm Tim McGraw.
What's up? This is Ian Munsick.
Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors. We have made it into April, and we all know that March was full of meetings to let the public speak so that we could get information out there to Game and Fish, and that will go right into our next big event, Janet, and that's the commission meetings.
That's right. We really appreciate everybody coming out for those meetings that we had across the state. We just finished those up this last week, and it was exciting to hear from people and to see the numbers. I mean, you know, we had everything from 3 people to 40 people, and so those were pretty well attended in the Casper region. And so thanks to folks for doing that. And we're looking forward to also reading those comments. Those were finished Wednesday. And so those have all been distributed, and we're getting ready to take our time for the next few days and read through those. It's pretty exceptional. And those go directly to the commission, which brings us to even more questions, Drew.
Yeah. And we're bringing in Justin Benfitt. And I know that this is one of the prime times for Game and Fish to really come together and make the decisions that are needed and really are beneficial to the outdoor lovers and the hunters and the anglers, because there's a lot of information that will be covered in just 2 days this month.
Well, yeah, Drew, and even less than that. You know, the April Commission meeting is the culmination of a long process that, like we've talked before, it's really a year-round process, but it is the pinnacle of the season-setting process. So as the biologists, the wardens, all the regions have gathered all their data, flown their surveys, analyzed the data, estimated populations, you name it, met with the public, met with landowners, formulated season recommendations. We then shop those with the public. We get the comments back. The formal comments, like Janet just talked about. This year, by the way, we think it might be a record number of comments.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, there's been an exceptional amount of interest this year. We then wrap all that up. We then present that to the Game and Fish Commission in April. And that's where they ultimately decide to approve regulations and they may or may not change some of the recommendations at that April Commission meeting. But ultimately, they will approve those regulations for next fall's hunting seasons.
So I know that there are lots of different avenues that have to be discussed. I mean, obviously, the big game is probably priority for a lot of things. But what about, you know, things like the waterfowl or, you know, small game? Is that all talked about at these commission meetings as well? Or are we looking at just big game?
Well, so the April Commission meeting is the big one, and we do that every year. And so at the April Commission meeting, the commission gets to hear and ultimately approve regulations for our general hunting regulation. That's what we call our Chapter 2 reg. So that defines things like how many, you know, doe fawn license you can have, or how far off a road you have to be before you can shoot, you know, orange requirements, just all those general hunting regulations. So they approve that. Then it's all the big game stuff. So deer, elk, antelope, bighorn sheep, mountain goat, bison,
moose.
Those all go. And then we have our small and upland game regulations. So anything from squirrels to cottontails to sage grouse, shark tails, dusky grouse, you name it. Then our migratory game bird regulation goes up, which is, that's waterfowl, so ducks, geese, cranes, other migratory birds. And then lastly, our turkey regulation also goes in front of them. And that's just at the April meeting. Then we can talk about some of the other species a little bit later on.
So I want to point out to folks that are listening that Justin can rattle this off the top of his head because he will be the one presenting all of this information to the commission this year. This is part of that new position that Justin took when he left the region and moved into administration. And so, you know, he's really been working across the state to learn and know the ins and outs of every single proposal that Wildlife Division has been looking at and proposing this year. And so it'll be a new adventure this year at the commission meeting for sure. And I think really informative, and we're looking forward to Justin doing the presentation to the commission. And go ahead.
Justin, since you are doing the presenting, this is great for me to ask. We always ask about the comments and about the information that Game and Fish gets. When you're making that presentation, how much do you rely on information that hunters or anglers have given you to kind of go off of?
It's a great question, Drew, and it's really one of the biggest challenges with just the regulation. You know, it's the Administrative Procedures Act, but it's the public process that's defined for all state regulations. So when we develop these, we have to, we develop a recommendation, we then send it out for formal public comment, and then we then digest that comment and decide how we're going to incorporate it. So it's a real challenge because, as we've talked before, we're constantly seeking public input throughout the year. It may not all be formal comment specific to that's tied directly to specific reg changes. So I don't want to confuse folks here, but the real challenge is we can get hundreds and hundreds of comments on, say, deer seasons, and the comments could be about everything under the sun. And we try our best to incorporate change based on what the public tells us they want, but we're absolutely not able to do it in all cases. It's a real challenge because there's a lot of competing interests that we hear. And so we're always just trying to strive to find that balance for what the public wants, what landowners want, and most importantly, what's good for the wildlife resource.
So really the process, you know, I was just thinking about, you know, when I was big game hunting this past year, the harvest reports and the surveys that are sent out. I mean, this all kind of goes in to your whole presentation. So we talk about it being a year-round process, but you're collecting that information as a presenter all year round.
Yeah, well, and I would just say, I don't know why Janet felt the need to say that I'm the one presenting it. I am the one presenting it, yes, but really these are recommendations that were born at the local level throughout the entire state. First and foremost with our field folks and then up through the regional administration in our 8 regions across the state. Vetted through them, and then they ultimately come to us. So I'm simply just the one presenting it. But you know, in those cases when questions arise on specific issues that may come up with, say, a deer season in Cody, I mean, we prefer to draw on the local managers there to answer those questions because they're better suited to it.
And yes, I did not mean for people to think that Justin was the one that was actually making all of these recommendations. And I didn't mean to infer that. But he is the one who is working with all of the folks on the ground and compiling it and putting it all together and knows all of that information. Whereas, let's say previously, maybe he just worked with the regions right around us and knew all of that information, but maybe wasn't as in tune with what was going on the western half of the state. And those are things that I think are pretty important for folks to recognize, right? Is all of the different positions within the agency, the different levels, and what everybody is responsible for. And it can be very confusing sometimes to know who to go to and who does deal with this information, because we all do something different. We all deal with people in a different manner, whether we're upfront, you know, answering questions, or whether we're in the back analyzing data, or whether we're in the truck in the field. So there's lots of different things for folks to know, and that can be very, very confusing.
And I'll tell you my point of, you know, bringing Justin in as the presenter. So it's kind of the reverse for me, because on this show, I'm more the presenter. I'm not the guy with the information. I take all the information that is given from Game and Fish or whatever, but I have to have a knowledge of it. And I study up before we talk and everything. So it's kind of the same ideal of it all. And exactly. But you still have to use the information that others provide to get the proper information out. And that's one of the things that we talk about a lot on this program, is that there are very clearly muddy situations that we all get confused with a lot of different details or even positions of who's in Game and Fish.
You know, and you're spot on. And, you know, we talk a lot about, like, if we go back to these comments that we get, these formal public comments that come in, you know, and let's just say you wanted something done in Elk Area 7 and it didn't happen this year, and your comment isn't mentioned, your specific comment may not be mentioned in the presentation to the commission, and you get upset. But people need to recognize that that comment was absolutely thought through and absolutely heard at the region level. So just because Justin may not take that exact comment and present it doesn't mean it wasn't heard, doesn't mean that it wasn't considered. And actually, you know, the way we kind of operate is a lot of these recommendations and decisions and everything happen on the ground level, which is really fantastic, before we present it to our decision-making body, the commission, who are a group of individuals who are appointed by the governor. And so, you know, knowing where to go, when to go, and who to go to can be this challenge. And so I don't want people to get frustrated if they think, oh, well, I talked to Justin, but I didn't see my comment listed or mentioned or discussed at this one culminating event, because it has been considered at other levels by other individuals. And so it's muddy, and a lot of it. And we should get waders for that mud sometimes, I think.
Absolutely, Janet. Well, let's wade through this more in just a few minutes. Hang around. Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
It's Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
Hi there. Thanks again for tuning in. Remember, you can always go listen to all of our episodes in the radio station's app. And we're wading through some pretty big stuff today with Janet Millick and Justin Benfit from Wyoming Game and Fish Department. It's not easy to pick and choose on things, but we know that there are certain aspects that are maybe a little more attention needs to be brought to. So during these meetings that are coming up in a couple of weeks, will looking at herd strength and all of that really be a factor in how the outcome of what the seasons are set will be?
Well, it kind of just really depends on the nature of the season. So, you know, and the proposal. So, for example, rewind the clock two years ago, Drew, you know, we've talked a lot about that 22-23 winter that had devastating effects on deer and antelope in the western part of the state. So in that case, you know, lots of drastic reductions were made to deer season lengths or license numbers and antelope license numbers and that sort of thing. So those recommendations were born out of a need to reduce harvest on populations that took a hit. In other cases, we are proposing changes to alter season structure based on hunting quality or needs to protect the integrity of public land hunting quality or to address private land damage issues, you know, that sort of thing. So there's a social component that's every bit as important as the biological component. And they get intertwined rather easily. And so that's just borne out in the proposals that we'll present.
So it really is fascinating. If you look, like, step back and take a look at everything that is collected, used, presented, and decided on, I mean, it's tough. But then there are some people that may get mad at Game and Fish because of certain things that Game and Fish doesn't even have anything to do with? Like, you know, we talked before we went on about, you know, the prices of a license or, you know, things like that. And it's so wild how many things you guys get the brunt of the bad stuff for that you don't even have anything to do with it.
Well, it's a real challenge because there's lots of things that govern the regulations that hunters and anglers see. So some things are under the purview of Wyoming state legislature because they're governed by state statute. Others are governed by rules that the Game and Fish Commission actually promulgates. So like the hunting seasons, quotas, like that sort of thing. Other things may be set in federal law. Some things we may or may not have jurisdiction over, like off-roading on BLM land or something like that. But yet we can control that on state land. It's really confusing. And at the end of the day, if folks have questions on that, just don't hesitate to ask.
Yeah. And really, how many different organizations or I don't know if organizations, what I really want to talk about, but divisions of government are in Wyoming that affect things like the land? You know, we have Game and Fish, you have, you know, the
BLM,
you have like the U.S. Division of Wildlife and, you know, all this stuff.
It all depends on whether you're federal, whether you're state, whether you're a land management agency. You know, the Game and Fish Department is not a land management agency, but yet we have lands that we manage. And so, you know, it's always clear as mud and it is difficult. And, you know, we always laugh about the number. I guess I shouldn't say laugh, but we do laugh about the number of people who are like, you know, why can't you affect the road in Yellowstone closure dates? And it's like, you know, that has nothing to do with the Wyoming Game and Fish Department. And people, you know, get upset about different things like that. And it's a tough situation sometimes to get, you know, the blame for that. But we sort through those comments and we recognize that stuff's important to people. And if we have any influence or input at any time, we definitely look at doing those things.
And there's a lot of cases where we may not be able, we're not the decision-making authority or neither is the commission.
Yeah.
But we do have an influence on the outcomes of some things because we certainly have cooperating agency status and partnerships with our federal land management, you know, Forest Service and BLM, and then even with some other federal wildlife agencies like Fish and Wildlife Service. And so, yeah, I mean, we certainly try to exert our influence on what's best for hunting and fishing and wildlife with those federal agencies to the extent possible.
So it really is a tough thing. And I know you guys get a lot of flack. You know, you see the comments and Janet, I know you don't go online and read things, you know, all that often, but people really give Game and Fish the hard knocks. And really, a lot of the stuff that they give you hard knocks on are things you can't control.
Exactly. And that's why I don't go online a lot of times, because I think I would go home crying every night. And so it is easier sometimes to you know, a lot of those folks aren't folks that you can make a difference in what their knowledge or beliefs are. And so it's kind of one of those things that, you know, we just encourage people if they're out there and they see things that, you know, folks are upset about and they think that maybe we're not listening, just give us a call. We definitely can respond that way and let folks know, you know, where we stand when we can. You know, there's often times that we can't make statements or comments on things if it's ongoing investigations or things like that. But we're certainly here to listen. And it goes in one ear and rarely goes out the other. We do keep that stuff, you know, filed away. And like I said, you know, if it was something that you want changed this year, it might not happen this year, but in 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, that might come back and say, hey, do you remember this fantastic idea? I saw this online.
You know, Drew, I would say with all that, you know, we're certainly not perfect. We do the best we can. We know that we're constantly faced with decisions that are going to make some people unhappy while we're making others happy. That's just the nature of managing a public resource. But the thing that we take very seriously about this is we are a public resource manager and we need to be transparent with the public. And so we need to be able to explain the why, behind all of our decisions, whether it's folks think that we're harvesting too many cow elk and we're catering to private landowners or outfitters or whatever it may be, or we're still continuing general license deer seasons for bucks only, even though mule deer numbers are struggling. We need to be able to explain the why to each and every individual that has that question. And so I always encourage folks to sometimes put the keyboards down, like put your keyboard warrior status aside. If you really have got something that's really on your mind, come ask one of our folks and start at the field level. Start with your field biologists, your game wardens, your local managers, and they should be able to at least give you the why. There's a why behind every decision that we make or don't make.
Look back to how your grandfathers used to be. My grandpa never got online once, and if he had something to say, he would go say it.
And we appreciate that. We really do. And you know, the other thing that I would be remiss if I didn't say is that we also have to recognize that the people, the passionate sportsmen and women that may have some things to say and get off their chest, these are people that care about wildlife first and foremost. Even if we feel like maybe some of their frustration can be misguided at times, most of it's born out of
passion,
a passion for wildlife, and what they see is what would be better for hunting and fishing opportunities. And so we need to always consider those comments, that input, and do what we can to accommodate it.
Well, I appreciate you stopping in, Jess. I know you guys are both busy this time of year because it is that time of year. It's April, and the meetings will be here before we know it. But I think we cleared a lot of stuff up. I think we gave out some good information. And again, if something seems off to you, let Game and Fish know. Get a hold of them, and you know it could make an impact on the future of the outdoors in Wyoming.
And you know, I guess one last thing I'd like to say, Drew. You know, we've talked a little bit today about frustrations from hunters or folks not quite understanding who makes what decisions and when and that sort of thing. But I can tell you, it can be easy to dwell on the negative, and there's an awful lot of positive that comes out too. And there's certainly a lot of support and reaffirmation for wildlife management in Wyoming. And so all of us here at Game and Fish need to remember that as well.
Absolutely. And just as a reminder, Drew, it is Wyoming's wildlife. It does belong to the people, and we are here to, you know, keep that going. Wyoming's wildlife. It's worth the watching.
It's Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
It's Drew along with Brian Woodward at Rocky Mountain Discount Sports, where things are heating up. You wouldn't believe that from this past weekend, but literally they're going to warm up this week into the 70s, and then the deals start happening here in the store.
Heating up, heating down, heating up, heating down.
We don't know which way to go.
We don't. Welcome to spring in Wyoming.
Yeah, no doubt. And, you know, we were just walking through the store on the way in here, and you know, things are starting to shape up for what you have coming up next weekend, and it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, the all-you-can-eat walleye banquet, just about a sellout crowd. There are going to be over 400 people there, and going to be some great items on auction. There's going to be some good games, and, of course, fantastic food provided by Occasions by Corey.
You went and did a sampling, and, you know, we've been out at the hangar for a while, and mm-hmm. they kind of had it down, and we've moved it over somewhere else, and now you had to go to a tasting because you never had Corey's walleye before.
And I can honestly tell you that if they can pre-produce this in the quantities that they've fed us the other day, it's going to be one of the best walleye banquets you've ever been to. The food was amazing. The baked walleye had some type of a lemon herb, some fancy sauce on it, and it was amazing. Like, everybody looked at each other going, wow, this is fantastic. And then, of course, you know, you can't beat beer battered walleye either. So
yeah,
that's going to be a great meal, and come out, have a good time. If you haven't been to one, you got a couple days left to get a hold of me here at the store at Rocky Mountain Discount Sports. We can probably still get you in, but there's going to be a fun night. We won't keep you too late, but get out there and enjoy some time and, you know, share some fishing stories if you got them with your buddies, and have a good night of supporting a great cause.
Yeah, and it may be a good time for you to buy a couple of drinks for a couple of fishermen. They might give you some tips.
Or maybe they'll take you out fishing.
Yeah, maybe. You know, it's all about connections these days, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. And, you know, we're heating up here at the store, too. I mean, we've got, you know, all of our fishing gear, a lot of new products in, and people are jonesing to get out, and we got some great weather coming up.
Yeah, so if you want to come into the store before you head to the walleye banquet to buy some walleye fishing supplies, Saturday, April 12th is going to be the day you'll want to do it, because you could save big time.
Yep, and April 12th is the day of the banquet. So, you know, before you go to the banquet, stop by the store. We are having our first ever bucket sale. So we've got 5-gallon buckets with our logo on there, and anything that fits in that bucket, we're going to give you 10% off.
10% off.
10% off. So if that means a rifle fits in there, a handgun fits in there, I don't even care. If you can fit a trigger grill leg in there, I'll probably still give you the 10% off. But, yeah, it's going to be one of our biggest sales of the year for sure, just leading into summer. And, you know, it's a good time to get your all your fishing gear. Of course, you know, Casper just raised their sales tax 1%, so this will help with that a little bit. But this bucket sale is going to be going on through all 4 of our locations.
Okay, so just not here in Casper. You can go hit them all if you want.
Gillette, Sheridan, and Riverton, all participating in this bucket sale. So make sure you visit each one of those stores as well, and be ready for a great day of sales.
Absolutely. Come on in and check it out. And, you know, if you haven't been into Rocky Mountain before or in a while, a 5-gallon bucket will fit a lot of fishing gear.
Oh, it fits a ton of fishing gear.
I mean, that's 5 gallons. You just imagine, I'm looking at a lure right now. What is that? Maybe 3 inches long?
A flicker shad? Yep, yep. You could probably put 300 of those in that bucket.
Yeah, and get 10% off. What a great opportunity to come in. And, you know, we talk all the time about restocking your supply. And if you have old stuff, might as well get rid of the old and bring in some new.
Well, if you guys out there are like me, like I've, you know, in the evenings when we've had a couple of these nicer days, I've been sitting in the back of the boat, pulling out my rods out of the rod locker, checking my line, retying, re-spooling, getting my fall lures off and putting on my jigs for spring fishing. Now's the time to prep and get it ready, because, you know, all of a sudden we're going to have a nice day and you're going to be like, I'm going fishing. Let's be ready.
Well, and that could happen. You just don't want it to be next Saturday, April 12th, because that's when the bucket sale is happening and the walleye banquet is happening, and then a couple of weeks after that it's the Tough Man tournament.
Yeah, the 26th, and we're already receiving applications for the Tough Man, so that's going to be another good event. Usually there's 35 to 45 teams at that, and I've been talking to quite a few guys that have been at Alcova and already catching walleyes. I mean, actually, they seemed surprised at how many they'd been catching. So I think the fishing is going to be good, and as long as the weather holds out for that day, I mean, it can be a little tough, but we don't want it nasty.
Right. What we had the last couple of days, hopefully won't be anywhere close to that. Maybe this last snap of cold was the end of it. And then, boy, we're looking pretty darn good for really summer to get here in just a couple of months. And I know that a lot of people are jonesing, myself included, to get out and camp and kind of take in a lot of what Wyoming has to offer. And we talked a little bit about last week, you know, getting that state park pass and your ORV stickers and all of that. And you can get that right here, too. But that will not be included with what you can fit into the bucket.
Yeah, there's not too many exclusions with the exception of state park passes and gift cards, really. But you know, any of the clearance merchandise, any real merchandise on the floor, everything's going to be included in that. But yeah, we're talking about fishing, and one of the other things a lot of times guys forget about is their AIS stickers.
Oh yeah,
you know, so that's something else you can purchase here. Even if we don't issue the stickers here, but we'll issue a receipt that'll allow you to get on that water that day. So don't be caught launching your boat without that AIS sticker. There's a pretty hefty fine on that, and then. There are some changes going on at Glendale. We'll probably talk about later about where AIS check stations are going to be at and that type of stuff.
Yeah, it's a fun time, because now is a great planning time before you get out and really hit the water. Maybe you already have hit the water and have seeing what's happening throughout Wyoming and getting things prepared. But come on by, check them out. April 12th, it's the bucket sale, first one ever at Rocky Mountain Discount Sports. You can go find all the other locations and more information about Rocky Mountain Discount Sports at rockymountainsports.com.
It's Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
It's Drew and Brian Woodward back. Rocky Mountain Discount Sports. Of course, we talked about that bucket sale happening on April 12th, which is next Saturday, by the way. 10% off everything you get in a bucket. And one thing that you could put in there is fishing line. And Brian, I was sitting with a couple of guys the other day, and one guy was from the South, and the other guy was from Mid-South. So we're talking like Arkansas
and Douglas.
No, we're talking like Arkansas and Virginia. We're talking
way
deep,
south.
Deep down. And both of them were, talking about never having gone out and walleye fished. So they really weren't sure where to start with what they needed equipment-wise. And then the conversation spread to leader. Mm-hmm. So like you may look at a fishing rod and the line is two different colors, mm-hmm, or two different styles of line, and they were a little bit curious about that. So I thought I would ask you that question, because then you can tell them exactly what to get when they come into the store.
Yeah, there's probably a handful of different opinions on leaders. Fluorocarbon leaders over the last 10 years have kind of been like the industry trend, I guess. Should be a little more translucent and refracts the light differently and stronger than just a regular mono. I use the leaders at different times of the year in terms of like the spring fishing. I'll tend to go a little bit lighter line, more clear line possibly if I'm using a jig and a minnow presentation. If I'm going to be pitching crankbaits, then I'm going to go with a braided line. But a lot of times I still will tie on a fluorocarbon leader to that. But a lot of times I still just use I'm a big Stren high-vis gold kind of guy. I like to see that line move before I can feel it sometimes. So fluorocarbon's kind of – there's a lot of different brands of fluorocarbon. I don't know that any one of them is better than the other. I've used a handful of different fluorocarbons as my main line on my spool. I didn't care for it a lot. It seemed like it had a lot of memory and kind of gave you that bird's nest a little more often than I would have liked it. So I use it primarily just for leader material. And a lot of times I'm just tying on 18 inches of leader before I go to my hook.
So really it's person to person on how, mm-hmm, you use it. What would be the significance if you were just telling somebody for the first time, the leader does this?
Yeah, the leader would could lighten up your presentation a little bit. So if you're using like a 15-pound braid, and then you want to put on like a 6 or a 4-pound fluorocarbon leader, you're gonna have a lot smoother action at the end. You might have a little bit better feel with that fluorocarbon, and it's going to be a little bit tougher resistance of that fluorocarbon versus your mono. Plus, the fluorocarbon doesn't have as much stretch as the mono. So, there are a few different advantages to it. Once, things start heating up here, when that June fishing comes in, I fish more of a reaction bite than I do a finesse bite. So I guess guys that are finesse fishing may tell you that they're using more of the fluorocarbon in that presentation, but I don't find it to be much of a difference.
Do you put the leader to bed during the hot summer, during the thick of the summer?
No, I use fluorocarbon leaders for my slip bobber presentations. If the bite tends to be getting a little more finicky, I might, go to a fluorocarbon leader. The biggest thing that I see in fishing with a lot of different people is a lot of people just are running too heavy of a rod, too heavy of line. They don't get the feel, that when a walleye picks things up, and we are talking primarily walleye fishing, trout, they'll eat anything.
Yeah.
not just kidding, trout fishermen. I use that fluorocarbon for different applications throughout the season. I love slip bobbering. Everybody, mm-hmm, that knows me knows that I love slip bobbering, and I run fluorocarbon on all my leader material on that. So, Yeah, I mean, I think it has a place. I don't think it's like necessarily the answer, but I usually find that people are using too heavy of a pole, too heavy of a line, too big of a reel, and they don't feel the sensitivity. So having a good quality rod and reel that is lightweight and matches up to your presentation. You know, if you're just sitting on the bank and just throwing a big old sinker out, you know, go ahead and run 10 or 12 pound, you know, line and big old weighted sinker, you know, or if you're just trolling, the rod a lot of times doesn't make a whole lot of difference. But when you're working on a jig presentation or a finesse bite, that type of stuff, having a line and a rod and a reel that are going to actually feel the bite is important.
So if somebody's starting out, I mean, obviously spending $500 on a setup like that, it's probably out of the question for a lot of people that are really trying to learn. Mm-hmm. But if you were going to buy a rod reel combo, I mean, they basically come in the ranges that you're kind of looking for, right?
Yeah. I think, you know, anywhere from 100 to 150, you're going to probably get a really good combination. I'm not saying that there's not some out there for that $70 range. But a lot of it's just personal feel, and then, you know, what type of fishing you're doing. Not everybody's a walleye fisherman. So, right. You know, I had a husband and wife in here the other day that was like, you know, we do a lot of bank fishing at Alcova. You know, what would be a good rod for that? And, you know, I mean, I was looking at even bigger rod and reels because they can cast them a little further, a little more line to them, and they didn't really have to worry about, you know, a finesse bite. But when you have a large size reel, a 3,000 or 3,500 size reel, after a day of jigging, you're going to feel it, you know, because it's a little bit heavier and a little bit bulkier and harder to handle.
So it really does, you know, depend on the size of the pole on, you know, mm-hmm. how you do your fishing and your thoughts on that. Because if you take a light pole on bank fishing, you're not going to get the results of a heavier one.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, there's certain like bass fishermen, you know, they typically are running a 7 or 7'2" rod, and they're running a medium heavy rod action. We don't carry a whole lot of those because we don't have a lot of bass fishing, but mm-hmm. we do carry some poles that were probably too big for bass fishing, but are more geared towards catfishing. You know,
right.
So I mean, yeah, just a little bit different. We don't carry a lot of rods that would be compatible for paddle fishing because we don't have a lot of it here. There might be one or two out there that would work, but you know, it's just kind of not our specialty, so we don't necessarily stock them.
So when you're thinking about the, you know, the size of line that you're getting in a situation like that, what do you usually run on your rods when you're doing walleye fishing?
So typically, I run 6 pound mono year round. If I'm going to be pitching crankbaits along a shoreline, then I'll run a 10 or a 15-pound braided line because that's going to give you a 4 to 6 pound diameter equivalent. I rarely will go over 6 pounds. You know, I do check my line frequently, and I replace my line maybe one or two on my poles that I use a lot. I might change them one or two times a year. But, you know, I don't typically break fish off with 6 pound line. You know, most of the fish we have out here are under 6 pounds, and the ones that are over 6 pounds, well, that's why you have a drag on your reel. And, you know, I mean, it's the pole and the drag are keeping you from breaking your line as opposed to the strength of the actual line.
So really, there's a lot of information in. You know, you think fishing is just something to do, but really there's a lot of thought that has to go into it if you're going to be successful and, you know, have good fishes every time you go out.
Well, and I think, you know, I'm getting ready to go on a float trip this week, actually. And, you know, I like those float trips because, you know, I get on the river once or twice a year and I can have an expert, you know, behind the boat telling me, hey, these are the bugs we're using. This is the length of leader we're using. This is how much weight we're using. This is why we're doing it. The water flow, we're fishing a seam, or we're fishing the bank, or, you know, I like to be able to kind of keep up on that. So if you're not a walleye fisherman, or even if you are a walleye fisherman, but you know, want to get a different perspective, you know, I mean, hiring a guide's kind of a cool way of getting a different idea. You know, I've got a lot of guys I know that have been going up to the Columbia River this spring. You know, they're dragging their boat up there, but the first day they're hiring a guide to kind of get the lay of the land and, you know, the technique of how the guides are fishing. And then they're using their boat for the next 3 or 4 days and, you know, kind of trying to master those techniques. And it's a great way of learning a body of water, especially if you're out of the area. You know, there's a handful of different Facebook pages that have, you know, fishing tips or, you know, Wyoming fishing, et cetera, mm-hmm. that guys are posting videos of where they're at and how they're fishing. I think those, you know, you're always in a learning mode. You know, I mean, I spend a lot of time on Glendo, and every year I fish a different part of that lake that I've never fished. And it seems hard to believe after 20 plus years yeah. that there's been a shoreline that I haven't fished. But, you know, as Glendo gets a little busier with, you know, more people from out of state and just even more people within the state, you know, I'm like, well, I've never seen anybody fish over here, but there can't be a reason. I mean, there can't be no fish over there. I'm gonna run through there. And, you know, sure enough, you know, I stumble across some different areas, you know, that hold fish, you know, every time I go out.
We talk a lot of times, if you're in a new area, finding the bait shop is one of the best ways to learn about, you know.
Yeah, or getting a haircut.
Yeah.
Everybody in a barbershop loves talking about fishing.
Yeah. And if you don't need a haircut, but just going and sitting, boy, you'd really get in there. You know, I've heard that about cigar shops, too. Yeah. They're all just got to talk about something while you're having fun. You know?
It's a guy's thing, you know. And but yeah, there's a you know, the summer's coming up, and there are quite a few different guides in the area, you know, especially down at Glendo, of course the river's always, you know, if you haven't floated the river in Casper, you know, from Gray Reef all the way through Edna's Kemble, you know, different times of the year the different areas are great, and it's nice and peaceful. It's nice and relaxing. You know, get a guide. Let them do the work. Let them provide the lunch. They're going to provide the tackle. You're going to jump in the boat with, you know, a bottle of water or whatever it is that you want. But they're going to take care of everything else, and enjoy the day. Enjoy the scenery. You know, my father-in-law, when we used to go, we floated a couple times, and he would spend half the day just sitting down, not even fishing, just watching the shoreline, yeah. looking for deer and antelope and turkeys and whatever else was going on. So you may not have to be a, you know, avid fisherman, but, you know, a lot of times I see, especially on the river, you know, or on the reservoir too, you know, husband will be out there in the front of the boat fishing, and the wife will be back there reading a book, you know, with her feet up saying sun tanning. So,
yeah. So don't let the intimidation of not knowing what to do from keep you from being out there. Just make sure you have your fishing license, make sure you have an AIS sticker, and mm-hmm. make sure you just out enjoy it.
Yeah, and you know, every June they have that Game and Fish has the free fishing day.
Yeah.
And I think this year it's like June 7th, sixth or seventh.
Yeah, it's the first Saturday in June. So
yeah, I think June 7th yeah. is a free fishing day. So it's a great opportunity to maybe, you know, plan a little vacation, take the kids out, you know, come buy them a pole to get started, and head up to the Bighorns or Alcova or Pathfinder, or Glendo. You know, get the kids out and take advantage of that free fishing day and let those kids experience, you know, some of the outdoors.
Yeah, and remember, one stop here in Rocky Mountain Discount Sports, and you can walk out and have everything that you need. So come on in, check them out. Don't forget, April 12th is the bucket sale. 10% off everything you can get in that bucket. That's a lot of fishing gear. Check them out at Rocky Mountain Discount Sports.
Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors with Drew Kirby. If you have a question, want to make a comment, or have an idea for a show topic, message us on the My Country mobile app. Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.